A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Utah's First Lady, Abby Cox. Today's episode is one I'm really excited about. I was able to sit down with Utah's Lieutenant Governor, Deidre Henderson. We talked about her, her background. We talked about her ability to be a non-traditional student. And we talked about what she's learned in her new role. And then I got to talk to the friends about it, which was a really good time. I think we're going to enjoy this deep dive into one of the most remarkable women in our state. All right, let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We are thrilled today to have Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson here in studio talking to us today. So welcome, Deidre.
Well, thank you, Abby.
Lieutenant Governor Deidre.
First Lady Abby.
I know. It's hard when we've known each other in other lives, and so we got to get used to this. This is fun. So we are just absolutely thrilled. How's it going? How do you feel? This has been a wild few months. Where are you at right now mentally?
It has been a wild few months. Where I'm at mentally depends really on the moment. Right now, I'm doing okay.
Good. Well, let's start. Like, I want to kind of go back. I know a lot of people know you, but and I'm sure we'll just have thousands of listeners here to to get to know you. But I just want to go do a little, you know, biographical stuff. Tell me about, you know, where you're from. Tell me a little bit of your family history. You know, those kinds of things.
Well, I live in Spanish Fork. I've been in Spanish Fork with my husband and kids for 23 years. We moved there in 1998. And it's not where I was born and raised. People used to ask me, where are you from? And I never knew what to tell them because I grew up kind of all over the place. And my family moved a lot when I was growing up. But now I can say with certainty that I'm from Spanish Fork. And that's where we've raised our kids. And we have five kids. Gabe and I have five kids, four daughters and one son. I call him my favorite son.
And we have a favorite daughter.
Yes, so. Yes, you know all about that.
Yes.
But my youngest is a senior in high school. So I just have one left at home and the other four are raised. Three of my daughters are married. No grandkids.
Yet. Now, tell me about your kids. So this, I feel like this is something that, and I've talked about this a little bit before, I feel like I was very unprepared. I feel a little betrayed by some of my sisters, my friends who have had adult children. Like, how has it been for you to raise adult children or to not raise, but parent, I guess? It's very different than your little kids.
It absolutely is. So it's funny because when I was, I call it the collecting babies stage because I had five kids in 8 years and
so,
I felt like I was
so
just
crazy
collecting children. And I thought, you know, I can't have more than five because I don't think I can go through another toddler stage ever again. And then when my kids were teenagers, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm glad that I don't have to do teenagers more than five times. And you're right. Adult kids is just something special. Now, I have really good kids. I love my kids, but it is hard to parent adults because you know, you can't take away the car keys.
You can't. The phone is there. There's no leverage there.
You have to just, I kind of have a little rule for myself where if I feel really strongly that I need to say something, I'll say it one time, and then I've said my thing, and I have to just let it lie. And it's hard for me. But it's been a good learning experience and growing experience for me. And I love the relationship that I have with my adult kids. It's wonderful. Especially with the married kids, it's even a different dynamic. And you haven't experienced that yet.
No, we have not.
But it's
darn
even,
it.
it's even different when they're married versus when they're not. But I love my sons-in-law. I have three incredible sons-in-law that we're really grateful for and we love dearly and are happy to have in our family.
Oh, that was so good. And you, yeah, so Gavin and I had this conversation the other day. He calls me and he says, Mom, how do I get my stimulus check? And I said, well, we claim you as a dependent, so it's going into our bank account. He's like, well, no, my friend told me I could do it. And I'm like, well, yeah, when I stop paying for your insurance and for your phone, then maybe we'll talk about your
exactly.
stimulus. So exactly. Yeah, this adult parenting thing is really kind of kicking my butt too. So.
It does. It does. But these are good problems to have, I've decided.
They are. They are. So tell me a little bit about Gabe. So Gabe and I have gotten to know each other the last little while. The second gentleman is what we refer to him as. And tell me how he's settling in. How are you guys working through this together? How's it going?
You know, it's going well, I think. People say, how's Gabe doing? And how's your family? And a couple of times I've had to answer, well, I assume fine.
No news is good news.
I haven't heard otherwise. It's been a really busy few months for us, and it's been particularly busy for Gabe in his business. So he's a physical therapist, and he has a business that contracts with home health agencies along the Wasatch Front. He employs various kinds of therapists, and it's been kind of a rough year for that industry.
Yeah.
It's been rough in a lot of different ways, and so he's just taken a lot on his shoulders. But he is a trooper. He is amazing and always so supportive. I joke, he's not just supportive of me. He actually like pushes me. He's my biggest fan. We used to do parades back, well, before COVID. I think one of the positive things about COVID was all the parades were canceled last year.
I agree.
But we used to be in these parades and he would always hold up this sign that he hand wrote himself, this big poster board that said, I'd vote for her even if she wasn't my wife.
I love that so much.
And that's just kind of sums up Gabe right there. He's just been an incredible partner, an incredible supporter. And I couldn't do any of the things that I do without him. And he's an incredible dad to our kids.
Yeah. Well, and I agree that he's fantastic because I've gotten to know him the last year or so. And just in the last few weeks, we've done a few events together and it's been really fun. We did the YWCA project together and he's a great painter and a good worker. And he was amazing. So we can't wait to continue those conversations with him and with you, and we'll take a break and be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back with Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson here today. We're so excited to have her. Let's talk COVID because
it's our favorite topic.
This is what we talk about now forever. Hopefully not forever. But so I don't know if all of our listeners know this, but you had COVID in August. Your family, not all of your family members, but a few of you had it, you and your husband, Gabe. And so talk about that experience, especially after having been immersed in it through the campaign and all these kinds of things. Just kind of walk us through what your experience with COVID was.
Well, you know, we talked about Gabe, and Gabe is given me a lot of things in our marriage. And it's probably my least favorite thing that Gabe gave me.
It's your worst present ever.
It is. So we don't know where Gabe got it. He got it somewhere. I mean, he wears PPE when he goes to people's homes and does physical therapy with them. But he picked it up somewhere. And it was at the beginning of August, and we were having actually a bridal shower for my third daughter, who was getting married in mid-August last year. And we were having it outside, and we were very careful. But that morning, when Gabe got up, his stomach wasn't feeling well. And we had my oldest daughter and her husband had come up from St. George to help with the planning the event and helping me with the shower. And we were all working on this all day, and he just wasn't feeling that great. So we made him go to our bedroom while we were outside with the shower, and come to find out he had COVID. And so I was really glad that we took the precautions that we did take, because we had a lot of people in that backyard of ours, and it would have been a terrible thing. It would have been, yeah. I would have felt terrible if we would have spread it around. But thankfully, only the people in our home that were close contacts with him got it. There were five of us. So it was Gabe and me, our oldest daughter, Hannah, her husband, Alec, and then our youngest daughter, Sydney. And we all got it. And I was diagnosed a week before our daughter Brooklyn's wedding. And so we had to postpone the wedding. And it was rough. I mean, that was disappointing and it was difficult. But thankfully, Brooklyn married into this incredible family that her new mother-in-law kind of took over, because I was really sick.
She took over and
replanned the whole wedding and really did everything that I, as mother of the bride, should have done but couldn't do because of how sick I was. And it was only a couple of days before the wedding that my doctor actually cleared me to go. I ended up being on supplemental oxygen for a couple of months and really, really struggled and continued to struggle even after that for a long time. I'm really feeling like I'm doing better now. Not back to 100%, but feeling like I can get to 100%. So that's at least hope. That's at least better than maybe where I thought I might be last fall when I was in the thick of it.
Well, yeah, and you're considered one of those long haulers because of just the repercussions that happened.
Yes.
I mean, you even had some back issues.
Yes. Yeah. So I have an autoimmune arthritis, which just kind of threw all sorts of complications into this. I ended up having a pretty big flare-up with COVID. And
did you do? Oh, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but there's this. So my family also has autoimmune issues. My dad has rheumatoid arthritis, as do two of my sisters, and so we were really concerned. I know with arthritis, a lot of times you go off your medication for different reasons, and then the flare-ups happen because you're regulating the medicine. Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say exactly what happened, but they did take me off my immunosuppressants because they were worried about me being able to fight COVID.
Yeah.
But I also have infusion therapy, so you can't go off that. I mean, it's just there, and we did postpone the next infusion for a couple of weeks. But my body also mounted this kind of extreme inflammatory response to COVID, and I got pleurisy, which is incredibly painful. If anyone's ever had
that. You can't breathe, right?
Yes.
Isn't that around the lining of your lungs?
Yes, and it's inflammation there, and it's not dangerous. It's not going to kill you, but it sure hurts.
You just want to die.
Yeah, it was really painful, and so yes, I about a month and a half, maybe 6 weeks later, I started getting severe back pain. My leg was hurt really bad all down my left leg, and then it just went numb. So from the tips of my toes up to my knee, just totally numb, and this weird mixture of numbness and excruciating pain. And so my husband, who is a physical therapist, said, you know what, I'm pretty sure you've got a disc problem. We need to get you in for an MRI. And I resisted, but eventually, a couple days later, was just so bad, and the numbness was really concerning to me. And so we went in, and sure enough, I had a disc that had exploded and was severely compressing a nerve, and ended up having a discectomy about a week later. The doctor said that the ligament over my spine was severely inflamed and weakened. But because of that discectomy, which was not that big of a deal, but I ended up getting a spinal cord leak, which
just awful.
I'm telling you, the worst thing I have ever experienced in my life. And so I ended up having two other back surgeries to try to fix the leak. The third surgery that I had was they had to like take off some bone and to access that leak and then fuse it back together. So I ended up with a spinal fusion I didn't need in order to fix the spinal cord leak that was a result of really of the epidural injection that I got before my first discectomy. And so it was just kind of this compounding of problem after problem. And at the time, you know, of course, we were running a statewide campaign. And
Yes, I know.
I told Spencer one day, I'm like, I promise you didn't buy a lemon with me. I was so worried. It was just, he would call me and say, how are you doing? Are you doing okay? Yeah, I'm doing great. And then the next day I'd be in the hospital. And it happened over and over. And I started feeling like, oh my gosh, he is regretting picking me as his running mate because I am just nothing but trouble right now. But thankfully we've worked through a lot of those
problems.
And
that's the thing. From our end, it was like, holy crap, she is tough as nails because she was doing all this stuff. You were doing so much when all this health stuff was going on. And it was
crazy.
It was wild.
I spent Election Day in the emergency room, which was somehow fitting for 2020.
Yes.
It felt very appropriate for 2020.
Well, you came down that night. We had just a handful of us in Fairview, and you came. We didn't know if you were coming down. I do remember that. We thought you weren't. And then when you showed up, looking pretty green,
that's awful,
giving a speech in front of, you know, a camera, but that, and, you know, not just the handful of us, but really, like, I thought, and coming off and basically collapsing in Gabe's arms, it was tough. It was tough for us to watch. We were completely worried about you.
You know, it was tough. And at that day, you know, they weren't sure what was wrong with me. They thought maybe it was aseptic meningitis. Mm. They weren't sure it was a spinal cord leak yet. And so the next day, you know, Spencer and I did all those in studio media interviews all day until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was at a 10. I could not do one more thing. And Spencer was so, he's like, go home. I got the rest of this. You know, you're fine. And it was later that week that we, you know, had some imaging and found that I did in fact have a spinal cord leak, which I did not know was a thing until then. Ugh. And so, it was tough. And I have to say, you know, I was still in the state legislature. I was in the state Senate, and we had interim committee meetings, and Spencer and I were interviewing people for cabinet positions and all of these things. And I did a lot of meetings from my hospital bed. And I kept joking that, you know, the really good thing about virtual meetings is you can do them from anywhere.
Yeah.
And the really bad thing about virtual meetings is
you can do them from anywhere.
there is no excuse, including being in the hospital.
I think that would have probably been a good excuse. But no, thank you for those. I guess I really want people to understand. And again, on this podcast, we're really about sharing people's stories and really in an effort to create more empathy. And I've gone through a lot of my experience, and I'm sure you have as well. And I'm sure it's not especially fun for you when you hear people say, it's not a big deal. It's like COVID is, you know, just it's a fake thing. It's a hoax. It's a whatever. You know, we hear it. We hear those people say those things. And I get really brokenhearted when I hear that because I think it's a disconnect in empathy. I think it's a disconnect between, you know, like, I haven't personally experienced this, and so therefore it doesn't exist. And I think that's where we have an empathy breakdown. Would you say that? What are your feelings when you hear someone having gone through what you went through with COVID and someone tells you it's a hoax? I'm sure it feels awesome when they say that.
It is frustrating to me. And you know, we all have our own personal experiences. And just because we've experienced something ourselves doesn't mean that, you know, everybody else experiences the same thing. And I think coming from that place, as you said, of empathy and of trying to understand people and trying to really peer into where they're coming from is really important. And if there's one thing that we've learned during the pandemic, it is to do that, hopefully, right? To understand that other people's experiences may be different than ours, and that we need to approach that with some grace mm-hmm. and some understanding and some empathy. Lots of lessons in flexibility over the past year and maybe thinking about other people before ourselves. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's one of the good things that can come out of this pandemic.
Yeah. So you talk about sort of these silver linings with COVID. What do you think are some other, there's some really horrible things we had. I mean, just dear family and friends that passed away. And so we've just seen it with our own eyes, how devastating this disease can be. I had a sister who, like you, kind of went through COVID initially, kind of, you know, was sick, but came out of it. And then 2 months later ends up being life-flighted from San Pete County to Utah County with a terrible infection inside her stomach and related to COVID, because it just built up this massive infection and she had to have this surgery. She was in ICU for a week.
My goodness.
And it was just awful. She just got back. She's been coaching my daughter's basketball team. I had to come and coach one of the games, which we ended up winning really close, which was awesome. So I obviously am coach of the year.
Good job.
But I actually was so relieved to have her come back and be coaching. So she's back, but it was a good long while. So we've seen those things and we've seen it firsthand. But there are a few silver linings, like you talked about. What do you think are some more of those silver linings?
Well, every time you encounter some challenges or difficulties, you can either look at them as challenges or difficulties, or you can look at them as potential opportunities. And I think that there are really a lot of ways that we can look at these as opportunities. And one of them, you know, I've been going back to school, for example. I'm about as non-traditional as they get when it comes to being a student. And I actually had increased access to higher education last year because of COVID, because so many things were put online. It increased my personal access, and I know a lot of people who had increased their access as well. And I think we can really learn from some of the things like that. What are some ways that we can take what we've learned? We want to get back to normal. We want to go to life how it was before the pandemic. But there are some ways that we have really been presented with opportunities that we should grasp. And some of it is that in that technology. Other ones are in the way we deal with other people, in the way we you know, value our time and our connections and our families, and really learned to strip out unnecessary things and focus on the things in our lives that are of most importance.
No, I love that. And my daughter, I remember we were having a conversation because she'd been quarantined because of, you know, at school for a few weeks. I think it was her basketball team. I think somebody tested positive. So we were quarantined for several weeks. And our middle school wasn't doing sort of the remote. It was either online or in person, and there was no in between. And so we had to, anyway, she was out for several weeks and trying to get things from teachers and just really upset because she's a little bit of a perfectionist. She's very driven. And she just said, I don't know if I'm going to get an A. And she was so upset. And I said, honey, this right now, we are just going to give ourselves some grace. We are going to be okay with whatever happens because this is where we are right now. So, and I love that you brought up your experience as a non-traditional student. So we want to explore that some more and ask and get some more on that in a minute. We'll be right back. We are back with the Lieutenant Governor, and we were talking about your educational journey. And I love this so much because, you know, when I was in school, Spencer and I were first married and we were both in school. And I just was really driven to finish because I knew if I didn't, it was going to be really, really tough. It ended up being really tough for me. I actually, Spencer graduated and I still had student teaching to do. And we were headed to Virginia to law school. And then I was panicky because I wasn't finished. And I had this incredible professor named Barb Fichtel at Utah State. And she said, "Abby, we're going to make this work." This is before much internet. There was a little bit of internet, but really before things really took off and we could do things like this. And I literally was I was pregnant with my first son. I was driving an hour from where we lived in Lexington to Waynesboro, Virginia. And I was doing student teaching there. I was about 6 months pregnant and I was videotaping my programs, putting them in an envelope and sending them back to Barb at Utah State. She would do my evaluations and then send them back. And so it's crazy. You talk about accessibility. It was crazy what we did. When I finished my student teaching, I did my portfolio, finished about Christmas time and had a baby in January. So
my goodness.
So I barely got under the gun. But your trajectory is very different. And I think not different, and it's non-traditional, but it's not as non-traditional as we like to think. Yeah. Because again, we talked to our friend Don Ramsey, who's actually in the same boat you are right now. Yes. So yeah, tell us a little bit about your story, your educational journey.
Well, I graduated from high school in Minnesota, and the day after I graduated from high school, my family moved to Hartford, Connecticut. And so I was there for the summer. My family was living in Connecticut when I came out to Provo to attend BYU. And my freshman year, it was the first day of my second semester when I met Gabe. We were in the same French class together. And
Which is very romantic.
Isn't it? It is. It's true. Our first date was to go see a French movie for class, Toto le Héros. And it was a terrible movie, but it was a fun date. And I did what I swore I would never do, which was to get married after my freshman year at BYU. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of resources. And I ended up pausing school in order to work two jobs.
Which a lot of people do.
Right. To put my husband through, he ended up going through physical therapy school. By the time he graduated from physical therapy school, we had two children, two babies. And I ended up having to really, you know, put a lot of my own things, personal desires on hold to take care of my family. And it's not that I didn't want to take care of my family. I did. Right. That was what I wanted to do. It was a priority for me. And I did that and I loved it. You know, it was a good 13 years of wiping noses and bottoms and collecting my babies. And I had five babies in 8 years and it was great. But I always wanted to go back to school and I didn't know what that would look like. We didn't have a lot of money, couldn't really afford it. I didn't know, you know, what I would do with all of these children that I had while I went back. So I did some independent study courses here and there. And I always thought when my youngest child started school that I would go back to school myself. But by then I was actually working for Jason Chaffetz, who was running for Congress. It was 2008 and ended up working a year for free for him. And that's kind of how I fell into politics. And so I just piecemealed it for a long time. And then I was elected to the Senate in 2012, and I always heard all these stories. You know, we were sitting in meetings and they'd talk about how problematic it was that women in Utah were not finishing their degrees and it's a waste of taxpayer money and this is such a huge problem. And I was so ashamed that I was one of those problem women. Was how it was framed and how I thought about it, and was always lived in fear that someone would find out about me and expose my truth that I wasn't a college graduate. And it was just this thing that was really holding me back. And I finally decided to really start going back to school here and there, which is hard when you've got a growing family and you've got, you know, a job and public service. It's really hard to prioritize that. In 2014, after my second legislative session, I went back to campus and I took a class on campus. It was a political science class. It was a really big class. And one day the department heads came in to talk about legislative internship opportunities. And it was at that moment that I realized with a great deal of horror that I did not qualify to be my own intern. I could be the state senator.
So wild. But I love this story.
I couldn't be my intern. And so that was very eye-opening. And I finally decided after that, you know what? I am not the only woman in this position. I am not the only woman who has had to put some of these things on the back burner for a while to prioritize family and other things in life. And I'm going to stop being ashamed of it. And I'm going to stop hiding from it. And I'm going to start telling my story and being really open about the difficulties and the challenges. So that's what I've been doing. I started back full time in school in 2019. And then last year, you know, I was supposed to graduate this April, but last year, Spencer kind of put another little wrinkle in my life's plans.
Your education journey took a little detour.
Yes. I had to slow down a little bit last year. And then, of course, with all of the problems that happened last fall, I ended up having to kind of pause a little bit there, too. I'm actually engaging in an internship this semester
for yourself
in the Lieutenant Governor's office. And
love it.
It's, in fact, I've got my internship report is due tonight at midnight. So it's been great. And I'm really grateful for those opportunities. And I'm grateful for the flexibility that I've been able to have. It has been a really long journey, but it's something. Yeah. I'm a history major now. I changed from political science to history and I love it. And I find it to be very relevant in what I do and very worthwhile skills, but it's also been eye-opening for me to see the challenges that are there that maybe are arbitrary challenges and restrictions that we build into the system that don't need to be there. Yeah. And I think we can rethink some things and make things easier and better, and even rethink what it means to be qualified for a job.
Right.
And work to provide more opportunities for people. That is something that your husband and I are very passionate about, which is providing opportunities. That's one of the six pillars of our administration is equality and opportunity and making sure that we are providing and expanding opportunity for every Utahn. And I think a piece of it, a big piece of it, is this education piece. Yeah. Where we want to stop putting arbitrary restrictions in place that impede people. And we want people to feel empowered and to have access. And so I think my personal experience has been very enlightening for that, and to see how some of these things affect real people and what we can do to make a change.
I love that so much. And without your experience being in the legislature, being in the Senate, I mean, that's the beauty of sort of this citizen legislature, right? Is that you bring these experiences and then you make the laws better. You make the process better. So I absolutely love that. Okay. So we want to kind of shift gears and do some real rapid fire questions. Although before we really get into rapid fire, there's one that I want to ask you that, so Spencer, people always ask him, you know, how did you prepare for this job? Obviously, it wasn't a job he really thought. I mean, it's not like it wasn't part of his life's plan. It wasn't part of our life's plan. But he always tells me, like, the one of the biggest things that helped him, like, really weirdly prepare him for what he does now. He did a lot of like speech and debate in school, and he loved drama. Like he was in musicals like you. And so he always says that actually really for what he does now, it really does help you. It makes you think quick on your feet. It makes you comfortable in front of people. It makes you, you know, it helps you to do all these types of things that he's doing now. Obviously law school helps him to think and his education helps him to really process information in a critical way. So maybe just a surprising thing that prepared you for this current role.
Well, I mean, Spencer's right. The theater experiences that I had really did prepare me. So something surprising about me is I after I was married to Gabe, one of my part-time jobs was I worked at the Desert Star Playhouse as an actress.
I don't think I knew that about you.
I did. I got paid to do it. Not very much, but I mean, I got paid. I actually was an actress there until I was 4 months pregnant with my oldest child and couldn't zip my Maid Marian costume up anymore. So, that's one of the surprising things, I love a melodrama actress. Who knew?
Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah. Let's start our rapid questions here by what do you think people often get wrong about you?
Oh, well, I think they probably think I am more educated than I am.
That's our dirty little secret today. It's all out. It's out.
It's out there. Yes.
I love that. Okay. So if you were to have chosen a different career path, what do you think it would have been?
Well, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a ballerina. So I don't know. I didn't have politician in my mind, certainly not lieutenant governor. So,
well, and what I think is so beautiful now is that you being here and being so open about your experience and hopefully sharing this with as many people as we possibly can, and them just seeing you, that idea of you can't be it unless you see it, that little girls will say, maybe that's what I want to do.
Well, I hope so, but I will just encourage them to not shoot for lieutenant governor. Maybe shoot for governor.
Yes. Well, that's still in the cards. So what's your favorite thing about the first gentleman, Gabe?
The second gentleman, Gabe?
Oh, that's the second. I'm the first. I forgot. Sorry.
I always joke that he's my ace in the hole. He's my secret weapon. Gabe is incredibly likable, and he is so good at making connections with people and getting to know them and helping people feel comfortable. And he's a really good role model for me in how to really get to know people and to make them feel comfortable. And he's a likable person.
He really is. I totally agree. So name three sounds that are your favorite sounds.
I love the sound of the ocean. I love the sound of birds. And I honestly love the sound of silence.
Yes. Right? After you've been a mom of five babies.
Yes.
Like, I have this thing, like, I tell people, like, I have a chaos meter. And when I get to the top of that, it's like, I'm done. It's time for me to find a quiet place by myself.
Yes. Definitely.
I love that. So what podcasts or TV shows do you binge? Or do you? Because you probably don't have any time.
I love historical drama. So I love, like, The Crown, Victoria.
Ooh, I love The Crown.
I loved Downton Abbey, Poldark. Love stuff like that.
Yeah. All the PBS Utah stuff, which
yes,
I love.
Yes.
So if you could talk to any person in history, who would it be? Because you've studied this. So who's your favorite historical person that you would just love to meet?
I probably would love to meet some of the powerful women. We don't learn a lot about them, but, you know, Queen Elizabeth I, even Queen Elizabeth II, Margaret Thatcher, Joan of Arc. I mean, there are a number. I always feel drawn to those, the women in history who have made a huge difference. I know there's probably more than what we know about. I know there is.
Yes.
And we need to start focusing on digging up and unearthing and dusting off some of those stories and focusing on those, because they're really powerful to me.
Absolutely. And the other part of that is, so I was talking yesterday a little bit to some women about Abigail Adams, because obviously she's my namesake. And so I've studied a lot about her. And what I said too was that there's probably so many women like her, but because she was such a meticulous letter writer, and because they saved. I mean, you know, there we talk about Hamilton and his wife burned all her letters, right. And so did Martha Washington. A lot of those were lost because they just, I don't know if it was a thing that they just did, like they cleaned house, which is probably more my style. Just throw
Burn
it away,
everything.
Get rid of it. don't have junk laying around. But because she saved it, and because she was such a prolific letter writer, We know so much about her and about what she was thinking, about what women were going through at that period in time. So
it's so important. Emmeline B. Wells is another one here in Utah who kept a lot of diaries and has been really, it's been really instructive to learn about her and read about what she and other Utah women were doing, especially in regards to women's suffrage and the early women's suffrage movement in the 1800s.
I love that. Yeah. And important for us to study that. Okay. A few more. A regular moment in your life that brings you true joy.
Oh, you know, anytime I get to just be present with my family, I love that. When I can decompress and turn my brain off for a minute and just, you know, play games and laugh and be with my kids and my husband.
I love that. Okay, last one. What's on your nightstand?
A lot of books.
And a lot of your history books that you're reading for your classes.
Yes, a lot of books and probably a few half-drunk water bottles.
So what are you reading like right now? What's your...
So right now I'm reading a book actually that Spencer gave me, These Truths. And by Jill Lepore. And it's a book on American history, and I absolutely love it.
Okay, dirty little secret. He hasn't read that, but I did, and that's why we gave those books out.
Okay.
He will. I know he will. But I love that book because it really is history from a different perspective.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
From women, yep. From people of color, from the indigenous people. And I don't know. First, and then you get into it. Maybe you're not there yet, but talking a lot about polling, which was really fascinating to me, sort of the history of political polls, which was just mind-blowing for me. So anyway,
it's a great book.
Lieutenant Governor, this has been absolutely delightful, and I cannot wait for people to get to know you better through this podcast. We so appreciate you being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you to the Lieutenant Governor for being here. We've learned so much about her. She's a dear friend, and it's been a pleasure of our lifetime to get to know her and her family. You can find her office at ltgovernor@utah.gov, and she's on Facebook and Twitter @Deidre Henderson. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Until next time, thank you for being a friend.